This is episode number 769 of the Secret Identity Podcast, and today in What's New, we're going to talk about Dynamite Comics and the Librarian series. We're going to talk about DC's Dark Days event, and we're also going to talk about some of our upcoming shows. Our comics this week will be Archie number 18, G.I. Joe number 2, and Action Comics number 975. And this week's Out of the Long Box will be G.I. Joe, America's Elite number 25.
Before we get started, does anyone want to get out?
The Human Torch was denied a bank loan.
This is all your fault, you.
Get that finger out of your ear. You don't know where that finger's been.
Why do you keep staring at me?
You have 20 seconds to comply.
And welcome, everybody, to Secret Identity. This is Brian Letenry here, as always, with the lovely, the talented, the beautiful Matthew A. Herring. How are you today, sir?
I'm doing well, but when you said G.I. Joe, America's Elite, number 25, it brought back a lot of memories.
It should bring back a lot of memories because as I show you the cover, and we're going to talk about this in our Out of the Long Box, this was the first issue of the World War III storyline.
And we got sucked in. I think we got a credit on a cover.
I think...
Or in the ads. I think we got something somewhere.
Because we interviewed Mike Baer at one point during this particular run. But what I'm excited about is because we've been reading the new G.I. Joe series, which we're going to talk about as well, it got me nostalgic for that World War III arc, which I thought was just an absolutely phenomenal way to start bringing home that G.I. Joe series from Devil's Due. But we'll talk about that in a few minutes, Matthew. Let's start off by talking about librarians, Matt.
Librarians.
We all like librarians.
Mm-hmm.
Dynamite and Electric Entertainment are teaming up to bring TNT's The Librarians to comics. Dynamite Entertainment, the leading publisher of licensed comic books, announced today as an exclusive partnership with Electric Entertainment to develop the hit television series The Librarians into an all-new series of comics and graphic novels. Based on TNT's hit movie franchise of the same name, The Librarians centers on an ancient organization hidden beneath the Metropolitan Public Library, dedicated to protecting an unknowing world from secret, magical reality hidden all around. Rebecca Romaine, Christian Kane, Lindy Booth, John Harlan Kim, and John Larroquette are all part of the series. And Noah Wiley, who was in the original Librarians movies, also, I guess, executive produces and is also a frequent guest star on the show. So they don't have release dates yet for that, but there is a comic series of the Librarians coming to Dynamite. What do you think about that, sir?
Very cool. I've never seen The Librarian. I've never watched. I've seen the trailers.
I've seen bits and pieces, and it's a show that I should absolutely love because A, I love libraries. I don't know why I said it that way. B, I love librarians. Our good friend Sarah Hodge Weatherby, our favorite librarian in the world.
Yep.
C, I used to work in a library when I went to Westfield State College.
I did not know that about you.
My favorite job ever.
I didn't know you worked in a library.
I would love to be a librarian, legitimately, for real. That is a job that I would like to have. And that job at the library at Westfield State College, my favorite job ever.
That is awesome. I never knew that.
Yeah. So there you go. Little tidbit about me. Haven't watched The Librarians really either.
Yes.
So I probably should because I'm sure it's exciting. I don't know if it was Noah Wiley that threw me off when it first started. He was coming off of ER. And I was like, I don't know if I'm a big Noah Wiley fan.
You know what it was for me? I think it came out around the same time that The Mummy was out and what's the other – the Journey to the Center of the Earth.
Yep.
Seemed like all these kind of family traveling – what's the other one? The one that can't even think of it now. Yeah, I'm drawing a complete blank.
Anyway, I also didn't like Christian Kane because – not because he's a bad actor or anything, but he played a jerk on Angel. And so when I saw that he was in the show too, I'm like, oh, I don't like that guy. He was a jerk on Angel.
Oh, it's Nicolas Cage.
Nicolas Cage.
The movies about the conspiracy theories and the Illuminati
National
thing.
Treasure.
That's the one. They all kind of came out around the same time.
And we got there. That was good because I can tell that would have bothered you for the whole rest of the show.
And I wasn't into any of those. So when I saw The Librarian, it was like they all looked the same in the poster that was in the ad that was in the comic books.
Librarian to me was a little more Indiana Jones than all of that stuff. So, but in any case, if you're a big fan of Librarians, be excited about that. You what?
I'm not a big indie fan.
Really?
No. No.
I don't say that with any righteous indignation. I'm not that huge of a fan of Indiana Jones.
My favorite, obviously I love the first one, but I'm not living it, loving it, breathing it. And I thought The Last Crusade, I think that was the one with Sean Connery. Junior. That's about it.
That's what you took away from that whole movie?
Junior. Yep.
Okay. Well, I think we've generated enough internet hate for this show in the past couple minutes. So let's talk about the Dark Days event that's coming from DC. Hold on. Did I actually print that news out? Oh, I did. Thank goodness. Okay. This is from The Beat, by the way, Heidi McDonald. It sounds ominous, but it's just a good catchy headline for the new DC event called Dark Days, which is going to be written by Mr. Scott Snyder and James Tynion IV.
Yes.
An all-star art squad, including Andy Kubert, Jim Lee, and John Romita Jr. The event includes two series, Dark Days, The Forge, number one, due out June 14th, and Dark Days, The Casting, number one, coming out on July 12th. According to PR, the dark underbelly of the DC universe will be revealed in this series, but it's also the culmination of hints and secrets that Snyder has been throwing in since he started writing Batman back in the dawn of time, Matthew.
The
Dark Days event looks like it's going to be the summer Bat event, at least, if not the summer DC event. So you being an avid Batman reader, and I'm actually reading Batman now too, I'm excited about that.
I am excited. I'm also excited about the Batman Flash crossover that we are going to be getting very soon. It's in 2 weeks.
Is it really?
Of these weekly things. It's a Batman Flash one. Jason Fabok, I believe, is doing the art on one of them, and you're going to have a crossover. And in the picture, they show Batman and Flash kind of mushed together, and it looks like they're holding the smiley face from the Watchmen. So we're starting to get more of these clues as to how
the Watchmen tie into the new Rebirth universe and all that kind of stuff.
Which right now, I honestly say, I think DC can throw anything at me, and I'm going to love it because I am just loving what they're doing. I think all bets are off with them. Everything's perfect.
Everything is perfect. Print it. Matthew said
yes,
that now.
Except for the I wish
after
I'd
last week when I declared I was walking away from the big two in print comics forever.
Yeah,
Matt said everything's perfect. All right. Well, I guess things have changed then.
Everything's perfect.
Everything's perfect now. Just a quick reminder, we have some shows coming up very soon. We have Avon Con happening on the 22nd of April at the Avon Public Library. You can go to avoncitylibrary.info/AvonCon to learn more about that. But it is a villain-themed event, and Matt and I will be doing panels there.
It is free.
It is. I mean,
parking
I should have probably led with that. I should have led with both of those.
Everything is free.
Except, you have other shows. I see you looking at your paper.
Yes, and then I'm starting to think, well, not everything is free because we'll be selling books there. So not everything
Matt's
is free.
Matt's books. Everybody heard it here. Matt's books are free. On that event.
Yes. So the 7th and 8th of March, or of April rather, we have Super Mega Fest, Marlboro, Massachusetts, NewEnglandSuperMegaFest.com, the aforementioned Avon Con on the 22nd, and the Hudson Valley Comic Con May 6th and 7th, HVComicCon.com. Check it out. I believe there's going to be a lot of the family and Hudson Valley. So I'm very excited.
Very nice.
Yep.
Any word on big guests or anything so far that you're looking forward to interviewing?
I think they're just starting to put up the guest list, but the actress that played Rita Repulsa in the original Power Rangers series.
Oh, nice.
Is going to be there. So I think that would be a fun interview.
Yeah. And now that we're starting to go to some shows again, we're going to be getting more interviews to bring back fourth grader spotlight. So we had hit a lull there for a little bit because, especially for me, like I wasn't going to a lot of shows, but that is changing now. We are in full con season.
Yeah, and we're going to have an interview, I believe, in the next episode or the one after that with Jeff from These, Facebook.com, These Comics.
Awesome.
Check it out.
All right, Matthew. And, of course, we have other cons coming on down the road, but we'll talk about those in future episodes. We're going to get right into our comics today, Matthew, and let's talk about Archie. Now, I read a headline this week about Archie Comics and an impending potential character death that is happening in the pages of Archie. Do you know anything about that?
I saw the article in my email and didn't open it and read it.
Do you want to know? You don't want any spoilers? You want to be
a
media blackout?
Oh, no, you can tell me, because I don't know who's going to die.
I don't know either. I just know that Archie and Reggie are in some sort of a road race or something.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so.
So I think there's a lot of good, solid, positive light on the world of Archie because of Riverdale. Riverdale is that show that, if you're an old and I've been talking to people about the show, it really seems like the biggest audience are the people like us, the comic book, the fans that know the comic, the older crew that might not normally watch a teen drama. It's the teens that I it's like, we got to get those guys watching this thing.
Well, as someone who has a 13-year-old daughter, I can tell you that my daughter is more caught up on Riverdale than I am. I am one episode behind.
Yep.
And she is constantly saying, did you watch Riverdale yet, Dad? Did you watch Riverdale yet? She absolutely freaking loves it. And then I have friends who maybe didn't realize what the show was about, but then when they saw that Luke Perry and Skeet Ulrich are on the show, yes, were like, I'm in.
Oh, now, yeah.
Because the whole 90210 crew is coming over to that. So lots of different reasons for people to get into Riverdale. And of course, then when they go seek out the comics and see this run that's happening right now, it's may not look exactly like the TV show, but I feel like the show is starting to influence things a little bit.
Yeah, you definitely have that familiarity. And this one is written, of course, by Mark Waid, who since issue one has mm-hmm. been doing an amazing job. And you also have one of my favorite artists of all time, Pete Woods. Pete Woods did the definitive run on Robin back in the late 90s. I love his style, and his style fits perfectly in this. Joe Eisma did the last arc, who to me is another one. I mean, they just seem to be getting – it's like Mike Pellerito's calling me saying, who do you want to draw Archie next?
Well, and I think to their credit, because they have essentially had a rotating artist crew on this book since it began, there has been enough consistency that none of those changes have been jarring.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
I think it's been great. So we start out where – what has been going on is Veronica was sent to a boarding school, and she is now back. And you start out with the very first page of Archie and Veronica giving a kiss with an anvil ready to fall flat on their heads. So you know something's amiss and things are going to go
wrong. Which for Archie is usually the case.
Yes. So chapter one, it starts out where he's trying to put on his tie. And then you all of a sudden see the tie somehow get trapped around his leg, wrapped around his face, and then he's screaming for his dad. And then his dad comes in and says, you know what? I think sometimes you're the mailman, son. So he fixes the tie. He gets him out there and – Archie's narrating saying, you know what, Veronica's back after a semester away. I can't wait to see her. It's going to be really special. And he looks at his car and realizes he can't pick her up in that thing. So he says, I'm going to do something about it. So he calls like the car service there. She gets in the car there, or he gets in the car driving around. The guy turns around and goes, hey, didn't you work for us once? And he goes, a whole day. And then you realize that he drove a car into a tree. For these guys, like it's sitting up in the tree and the guy who is driving him is going, how? And then he's like, oh, no reason. Don't worry about it. I just kind of assumed you did. So as he is driving by, you have Dilton and Betty are walking down the street together. And you see that she's dreaming about Archie and he is dreaming about her. So as the car drives by, the thing's misfiring. And then Dilton goes, oh, you know what? I believe it might be the catalytic converter. They better get it fixed before it burns out. And Betty goes, well, I would start to look at something else. If the car's got 200,000 miles, you might want to do this. So for the next two pages, they're just going back and forth at what is going on with the car. And then you're starting to realize maybe they got a little more in common than we thought. And he absolutely is just in love with her. And she's like, how did you know anything about cars? He goes, they're just machines. I know machines. So now you go to chapter two where you've got Detective Jughead Jones, who is at Pop's, and he's like, you got to give me a burger. You need a burger. And then Cheryl and Jason Blossom show up, and they're saying – and she was the reason that when she got kicked out – like Veronica was put away at that boarding school like in Switzerland or France. Cheryl Blossom was there running the place. Veronica ran her out and then also had Veronica's dad buy the company that the Blossoms were owned – and kind of they lost a lot of their money. At least that's what they were told. So Cheryl Blossom and Jason want to know what is going on and what is happening. So they enlist Jughead. But when you look at this, Brian, I'll show you really quick. You see that they're kind of drawing Jughead a little bit more like Dylan. Is it Cole or Dylan? Sprouse.
It is Cole Sprouse.
Cole Sprouse. So they're making him look a lot more like him. And so Cheryl is there saying, you know what, I wish you could maybe do a little detective work. And if you find out any information as to what happened with my dad's company, it'll be free burgers for a month, no matter how many you want to eat. So he's in. He's signed up. Now you've got Veronica and Archie back on their date. They get to a restaurant and the guy sees him, runs out. And it says he goes back in the kitchen. There's a sign that says wanted for crimes against waitering. And it's Archie with like a thing of food on his head.
I like that he's like blackballed by every business in town.
Everywhere. So they, as they're having their dinner, you see him coming back with a sock or with a sack, and they're going to throw him in a sack and get rid of him. So before that happens, they get out of there. And they're realizing that as they're talking, they don't have anything in common. They're not able to pick up where they left off, which is kind of upsetting to them. Now you go back to Dilton and Betty at a car show. They're looking around at all the cars, talking about everything. And then when they get out, they go back. You've got Jughead, who's doing some detective work, and goes up to the Blossoms and says, I see what happened. I know exactly what's going on. And then as that part of it's ending, Veronica and Archie are coming back from their date, which hasn't really gone that well. They seem a little uncomfortable. There definitely is a distance between them. And Dilton is saying goodbye to Betty, and he kind of lets his feelings out to her, saying, you know, I kind of like you, and I'd like to go out on a date with you. And she goes, but I'm kind of busy, and kind of blowing him off. He's all upset and sad. She is kind of, you know, thinking, geez, what did I just do? As he's walking away, his phone goes off and sees a sign, text that says, how about Thursday? So he's all happy. And then you've got Veronica that goes into the house, into her mansion, and says, you know, well, I'll talk to you soon, Archie. And that's where that part ends. And that's where the issue ends. So you've got Veronica trying to come back in, Archie trying to kick it off where it all left off a few issues ago. And it's not quite working. You've got the Blossoms that, if you've watched the TV series, you can see the Blossoms are, although one of them's still alive, it's they're conniving and they're being all sorts of rotten. And then in the last few pages, you have sort of a comparison of why Riverdale and Archie Comics, you know, the closeness of them, where you see a picture of Pop Tate's, then you see it from the comic books. Then they go through all the actors like KJ Apa, and you see him and his Archie counterpart in the comics. You've got Betty Cooper, who is played by Lily Reinhart. Camelia Mendez is Veronica. And they've got them where they're, you see how close they actually are to the art that's in the comics now. It goes all the way through the cast, including Betty's mother and Veronica's mother, Jughead. Just a great, great, great book. I'm really, again, loving what they're doing. I've fallen off a little bit of the Jughead book. They're not relaunching it, but they're going, they have a new creative team coming in, so I'm going to give it a shot. But this one and Reggie and Me have been fantastic.
Well, there you go. All right, Matthew. Well, I'm going to jump over to IDW, and we're going to talk about G.I. Joe number 2. Might I remind you, the crown jewel of the Hasbro universe.
I did not pick this one up yet.
So previously in G.I. Joe, what we found is that there is some stuff going on in Athens, Greece, with some a potential group of troublemakers that some of the Joes are being sent to check out. And we also have something going on in Inner Mongolia where Crystal Ball and the Dreadnoks have taken over this whole area. And so you have two groups of the Joes. You have Roadblock and Scarlet, who are sort of at HQ. You have Gung Ho and Lady J, who are out in Athens, Greece. And you have Quick Kick and Rock and Roll. And who else is the third one that's with them? It's Quick Kick, Rock and Roll, and I believe, is it Cover Girl that goes with them? Hold on a second. No, it's Doc. It's Doc that's with them. So what we see over in Athens, Greece is you have Lady J and you have Gung Ho. They're trying to figure out what this group in Athens, Greece is up to. They, you know, they've been going around. They've been putting up anarchy signs everywhere. They've been causing a lot of trouble. And they sort of stumble upon this meeting of all of these people that have been out causing vandalism and doing all this stuff for this group. And one of the guys is there saying, look, you know, we need a symbol to strike fear in the defenders of the status quo. We're the rebellion. We're doing all this stuff. And I want you to look on the symbol of our rebellion and rejoice. And he rips these sheets down off the wall, and it is the sign for Cobra.
Mm.
So in Athens, you have Cobra, who is kind of branding themselves as a, you know, just a against the establishment type of movement. And they've got a lot of people sort of on board with that. It remains to be seen whether or not they're going to buy into the symbolism of it. But you have Lady J saying to Gung Ho, we need to call this in. And he's saying, I don't know. It's kind of a bunch of kids. They probably don't even know what the symbol means. I don't think it means that Cobra's back in full force or anything like that. And she says, no, we're calling that in. So she's going to let Scarlet know about that. Now we go over to Inner Mongolia, and you have Doc and – oh, Cover Girl is – there, isn't she? Yep, Cover Girl's there, Doc's there, Quick Kick, Rock and Roll, and Roadblock. And they're all there waiting for a couple of contacts that are going to bring them into the area that the Dreadnoks are currently controlling. And so they're waiting for their contracts, and all of a sudden these two siblings show up, And they say, oh, we'll take you guys to exactly where you need. And so they start following them. And there's some stuff going back at the Joe's base, but you have Scarlett there who you know, Lady J is calling in to talk to. And she's saying, it's good that you let me know about this. We need to figure out if this Cobra thing's getting bigger than we thought it was going to be. Now we cut back to the fact that they have a prisoner at the Joe's base. And when she goes to try and get some information from this prisoner, you see that it's the Baroness. So they have the Baroness in custody. She goes to visit the Baroness and she is saying, what's going on in Athens, Greece? Because we're starting to see some Cobra activity. Is Cobra really there? What are they doing? What's going on? And of course, Baroness isn't going to tell her anything. So that conversation pretty much goes nowhere. And we cut back to Inner Mongolia. And you have a conversation that happens between Rock and Roll and Quick Kick. And I don't know if I like it yet. Because Rock and Roll is saying, hey, man, it's great that you're here with us, Quick Kick. This is really good because you can probably speak Chinese. And he's like, that's why you think it's cool that I'm here? And he's like, yeah, you know, Snake Eyes is the man, but you're good too.
Oh,
you know,
boy.
And you're good. And that went right to my core.
It did.
Because you know I have an inherent bias against Snake Eyes.
Because of Quick Kick. Your love
because
of Quick Kick.
Because Quick Kick is my number one G.I. Joe of all time. And I didn't like that. That was a shot across the bow. And Quick Kick basically says to him, look, buddy, I'm here. I'm here because I'm better than Snake Eyes, okay? Snake Eyes needs an Uzi and he needs, you know, computers and all this kind of stuff. I don't need any of that stuff because I'm the best martial artist there is. So on the one hand, I like that. But on the other hand, I don't know if I like them painting him as this defensive, like, I have to live in the shadow of Snake Eyes kind of thing. That's my job as the fan. I will stand up for Quick Kick. Quick Kick, you don't need to do that. You're awesome. So anyways, they're following their two contacts and these two kids, they're teenagers that are bringing them into this place. And they get to this like compound where there's this giant mansion and you have Rock and Roll saying, I'm pretty sure I think we could have found this place by ourselves. And the kids are saying, yeah, but you couldn't have gotten inside. You couldn't have got into where you need to be without us. And they follow them in there and you have Roadblock saying, everybody stay frosty. We don't want to get, and they turn around and the doors close behind them. And you see that the two kids that led them here, when they let the holograms go that were making them look like someone else, they are Xander and Zarana, who are part of Zartan's crew. So now you see they're there, the Dreadnoks are there, Crystal Ball is there, and they have this other dude who is this giant cement block on a pole as a hammer-wielding guy, and they're going to have to face off against the Dreadnoks here in the giant living room of this mansion that they're now trapped in. And so all heck breaks loose. They start going at it. You have Cover Girl who pulls out dual pistols, starts firing away at them. You have Quick Kick who is about to face off against this big shirtless guy coming at him who looks a little bit like the wrestler from Escape from New York.
Ox?
Yes.
Baker?
Yes. Looks a little bit like him. And he's like, well, you ready to fight? And he says, yeah. You mind if I have a drink first? And he pulls out a bottle of something and he drinks it. And from what it looks like, it's alcohol. And from what I can tell, they're doing like a Jackie Chan drunken master thing with him here. Because what happens is he ends up drinking this stuff. Everybody else is fighting. You have Ripper, who was one of the Dreadnoks, who has a new weapon now. He's got a weapon that fires knives at people. And so he's firing that thing off. They're fighting back and forth. Quick Kick takes care of his guy, but it seems like he's like half in the bag by the time that he does. So it seems to me like they're doing a drunken master thing there. You have Doc, who displays some of her technology because right before Rock and Roll's about to get shot, she has this little handheld device that all generates like a force field around them and stops him from getting hurt. Then you have the other Dreadnoks coming at him. They end up battling those guys to a standstill, but that's when Crystal Ball reveals that he has a lot of the local citizens that he's put under his mind control, and he's now sending them all to kill the Joes, and the Joes don't want to kill innocent civilians. And so that's how this issue ends, is they're about to face off against a group of civilians now, and they are trapped in this space with them. And so that's the issue there. Then in the back of it, you get some sketches, you get some G.I. Joe files on some of the characters in this group, and then you get a lot of stuff about the overall universe that they're trying to pull together over at IDW with all the Hasbro products right now. Now, the writer is Aubrey Setterson. The artist is Giannis Milogiannis. Milogiannis is his last name. Colors by Laverne Kidzierski. Letters by Chris Mowry. Edits by Carlos Guzman. And the publisher is Ted Adams on this one. So this book picked up a lot in the second issue. And now I think I'm kind of hooked on what's going on. I love the fact that Quick Kick is a main character. Mm. I just don't know if I'm totally in love with the characterization of Quick Kick yet. But I'm interested to see where it goes. And I'm not going to look a gift horse in the mouth. I'm getting a comic with Quick Kick in it, for crying out loud. But yeah, the story's interesting. Clearly, Cobra's on the rise again in a couple of different places. So it will be interesting to see how that comes together.
Very nice. So a book that it's always funny to talk about the numbering of, I'm going to be talking about the latest issue of Action Comics, 975. It's a lot of issues.
It's a lot of issues.
So what has been going on in this? This is Superman Reborn. This is the second part of the Reborn thing going on within the Superman books. So when the new DC Universe Rebirth happened, there was the Superman of the 52 that died.
Yes.
And
died like Superman died in Batman versus Superman.
Yes. So he died. And then you had Superman and Lois Lane and their son Jonathan kind of coming to this planet.
From another
Earth. And now they became the Superman. That has been a great story arc, because in the Justice League, he still kind of looked at like, well, he's stronger than all of us, but we don't know who he completely is. All that really cool stuff going on. But now in the comics, you've had Clark Kent walking around. Now, Clark Kent remembers everything about his life as Clark Kent, but not about Superman. So he's looking at Lois going, we need to be together. I don't know what's going on. Lois has started to work at the Daily Planet again. And
the Lois that's working at the Daily Planet is the Lois that's married to Superman.
Yes, because the Lois of this Earth had died.
Right.
She exploded at the beginning of Superwoman number one. And the last issue of Superman, all of a sudden Clark Kent showed up at the house and Jonathan disappeared. So, of course, that's not making Superman and Lois very happy. So this one is written by Dan Jurgens, art by Doug Monk, the pencils are, and Jamie Mendoza, the inks. Will Quintana is the colorist. And what is going on is Superman is now flying into Metropolis, kind of narrating in his head what is going on as he's talking to Lois, saying, we'll get him back. We'll get him back. We don't know what happened, but we'll get him back. They blaze into Clark Kent's apartment because they see where it is. And he went on a date with Lois. I'm wondering just before, let me make sure. Okay, so in the last issue, Lois went on a date with Clark Kent just to kind of get him off her back. Saying, all right.
And probably try to find out what's actually going on with him.
But it got a little too crazy for her. She's like, look, this is not working. So because he was like, we can be together forever. We can be together. And she freaked out at that. So they break into his apartment and they're in there and they're looking for John. And she says, oh, there's only two heartbeats in here. One of them's ours. So they look through the apartment. They see sort of all this sort of stuff. And excuse me. And they're realizing there is a lot of junk food and stuff there. So they're thinking, wait a minute. Did this Clark Kent kidnap Jonathan and was planning on keeping him here? And then you go in, you open up a door. They open up a secret panel and Clark Kent is there. So Superman grabs him because his son is missing. He's screaming at him saying, I'm talking to you. Where is my son? And he goes, oh, your son. Oh, the one you never told me about because you look like him and you love him, and looks at Lois and says, you love him better than me. So Superman is like, why are you doing this and what is going on? And then all of a sudden, Clark kicks Superman, which this Superman has shown no powers. He broke his arm at one of the first adventures of this whole return to this DC universe. And he's like, I was helping you and you let me down. And he's like, I don't even know what you're talking about. He grabs Superman when he goes to punch him and starts squeezing his wrist. And Superman's like, how are you doing this? And he goes, all right, maybe I should explain something. Let's play. And you see Clark just getting more and more angry. And now you're starting to think, who is this Clark? There's something about this. So you turn the page. And to be honest, I had no clue as to who Clark was.
Sure.
Not a clue at all. Not even two Supergirls ago gave me the idea of who this possibly could be. So you see, as Superman's going through this thing, this person is changing, saying, you know, hey, is it me? Am I the one who did it? And it's Lex Luthor. You turn the page and it is Bizarro saying the same thing. So for 7 or 8 pages, you are getting all the villains that Superman has ever fought. You get Bizarro. And then that was my guess. I thought it was Bizarro. So I see that. I'm like, I guess it's not Bizarro. Then my next guess would have been the Parasite. There he is. Mongo, who we all love from the cartoons. And they just keep going through. So he's changing. And all of a sudden, and as he's doing this, he's changing into the cyborg Superman, into Doomsday. He keeps saying, say my name, tell me who I am. And then all of a sudden, Lois, you see her going, oh my gosh, I know who this is. And you turn the page, and it is Mr. Mitzelplink. Now, in Supergirl, this is the funniest thing. I think a lot of people that are my age say Mr. Mitzelplink because that's what it was from the Super Friends cartoon. But it has changed a million times since. And did you see the Supergirl with Mr. Mitzelplink when
he
showed
up? No, I did
not. And his name was, I am Mr. And my wife and I both go, Mitzelplink. And he goes, whatever they're pronouncing it as. So that was a great episode too. But
I used to always say Mitzelplink.
Yeah.
That's how I used to say it.
So all of a sudden you have him there and it is the classic guy with the purple hat. And so they're freaking out going, where is John?
And he can basically change reality.
He can change reality. He can change everything. And Superman is powerless because he can't do anything against magic. So he is just sitting there, sitting Indian style, or as my people would prefer, crisscross applesauce, floating around above him. And he's talking about the fact that, yeah, you know what? I got your kid. And you're just going to have to listen to me until I figure out what we're going to do to make this all right. And then there's a flash and he disappears. So now Lois and Superman are alone. And they're like, we have to get our son back. And then Superman looks at Lois and says, we got to get John back. And she looks and goes, John who? So that's where this part of the story ends, which will be continued in the book I'll be reading tonight, Superman number 19. Now you turn the page and I always get a little nervous at some of these things when you get that special story at the end.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of that.
But this one is awesome.
Okay.
So it's written by Paul Dini. And Ian Churchill is the artist. So you get this is where Jonathan is when this is all going on.
Oh, okay.
So Jonathan disappears, and this is where he is. So he's walking around. It's like just endless walls, endless corridors. The carpet is blue and neandering all over the place. And he's like, where's my dad? Where's my mom? And he's like, hey, you know what? Just relax. You're going to be here for a little while. Let's get to know each other. And let me tell you a little bit about me and your dad. So then you get this whole flash of the life of Mr. Mitzelplink, which if a lot of people don't know who he was, he's like Batmite, but for Superman. He's like, you know, I got a hot wife, which was funny because I believe that was from the cartoons when he had the hot wife. Because he was like, yeah, I'm just going to go back to my dimension to my hot wife. And he's going on and he's talking about the fact that, I always let your dad win. And there's a scene where he's got all these cross marks and checks all over the ceiling saying, you know, these were all the times that your father, you know, that I let your dad win. And then all of a sudden he gets the realization Superman beat him all those times. So now he starts getting really upset, really angry. And then you go back to, you know, how this whole thing happened, how he thought, you know what? Worlds were ending. I saw this happening and I figured this would be a great chance. So before this world ended, I became Clark Kent and started doing all this other stuff. And this was when Lois outed Superman. If you remember in that arc.
Yep.
That's when he became Clark. So he's going in and he's like, yeah, you know what? And then I showed up at your house and stole you. And now I'm just waiting for your dad to show up so I can take care of him. And that is how this part ends, where it's going to be – that part is going to be – the story will be continued in the next one. So what I really loved about that is you get two full stories, one of them of what's going on with Jonathan, which is completely relevant. It wasn't we're just going to throw some filler in. This is a legit story of where is Jonathan right now. And then you've got this amazing story right now of what's going on. And there was a story on Yahoo News about – Superman Reborn. And I started reading because they were like, oh, this is going on. And I'm like, I don't think they're reading the same thing. So I stopped reading it because I didn't want to spoil what may happen in issue 19. But there's something crazy that's going to happen. And this book just keeps telling me why I love Superman. It's just such a great read.
Yeah. And I haven't been reading Action Comics at all. I've been reading the proper Superman book in the new one. And I also just started reading Super Sons, which has been great well. But I have not read Action Comics, and I hope that it doesn't go in the direction where if you're not reading Action Comics, then you're not going to understand what's happening in these other books, because that sounds like a cool storyline. And Jonathan has been a big part of the Superman book.
Yep, and it's a $3.99, and it's pretty thick. So you got extra pages.
Now, is that going to be a monthly now?
I don't know.
Because you know they're doing that whole thing. The monthlies will be $3.99 and the bi-weeklies will still be $2.99.
I'd prefer to just go back to monthly and pay $3.99.
Really?
Yeah, than $2.99s.
All right, Matthew. Well, that's your new comics for this week. Now, it is time for your Out of the Long Box, and we are going to talk about a book that I love for a lot of different reasons. Number one is because it has my three favorite Joes on the front cover. Does it have my four favorite Joes on the front cover? Hold on a second now.
It's a huge cover. It is the Sgt. Pepper of G.I. Joe covers.
I think my fourth favorite Joe might be on the back cover. But anyway, so G.I. Joe, America's Elite, number 25. Now, the G.I. Joe, America's Elite series was done by Devil's Due, and this book came out, I believe, in 2007. Yes, it was. June of 2007, this book came out. It is who is the creative team on this? I know Mike Baer is the artist on this one.
I'm trying to think who was writing that at the time.
Yeah, here, it was Mark Powers.
Mark Powers.
So Mark Powers writing it. Mike Baer art. Jean-Francois Boileau is the colorist. Brian Crowley the letters. Phil Cost is the military advisor. And Mike O'Sullivan is the drill sergeant on this one, which I'm assuming is the editor.
Yes.
So G.I. Joe America's Elite number 25 starts off the major story arc that I think pretty much brought this series to a close,
yeah,
which was World War III. And up until this point in time, the book, if I remember correctly, was a smaller team of Joes.
Yep.
So when America's Elite came back, it was a smaller team of Joes. But the events of this series sort of bring all hands on deck. And what's cool is you get on the front cover, even though all of these Joes don't necessarily appear in the series, the cover is an homage like to all the Joes there ever was. William the Refrigerator Perry,
yeah,
is on this cover. Sergeant Slaughter, mm-hmm, is on this cover. And I was looking for Barbecue, and I know he has to be on this cover here.
Barbecue. This is where we've gotten to, looking for Barbecue on the cover.
Well, Barbecue is the firefighter, and he was probably my fourth favorite Joe. He is – I don't see him there. I'll have to go look back through it later. Maybe he's right on the spine or something like that. But on the front cover, you have Quick Kick. Mm-hmm. Prominently displayed on the front cover, which, of course, my favorite G.I. Joe. My second favorite G.I. Joe, Lowlight, also
Lowlight
on the front cover. And darn it, if I can't find – oh, and Snowjob, my third favorite Joe. Snowjob, Barbecue, kind of tied, hot and cold there. He is on the front cover as well. And I don't see Barbecue. Well, that could be a problem. Anyways, Matthew, let's get into G.I. Joe, America's Elite number 25. What has been happening in G.I. Joe is I believe that at this point, I think it was Lady J that got killed. And you also had Cobra Commander, who had been off the map for a long time, coming back.
Yes.
And what has recently happened is you had, it says, after a whirlwind pursuit across the globe, we were finally able to catch up with escaped prisoner, the Baroness, because Baroness was a prisoner, mm-hmm, of G.I. Joe in this series as well, thanks in large part to a tip from former member Flint. So the Lady J situation, I believe, brought Flint back into the fold, and I'll have to go back and read that to make sure that's what happened. But upon tracking her to a Cobra base, agents Flint, Snake Eyes, and Spirit were witness to a transaction between Baroness, her husband, Destro, and Cobra Commander, in which Destro exchanged his weapons manufacturing company, Mars, for his infant son, which Cobra Commander had possession of. So this event kicks off with Cobra Commander now having full command of Mars. Mm. Because Mars was always – Destro would sell to Cobra, but Cobra Commander didn't own Mars. Now he owns Mars, yeah, and all the weapons that come along with it. During this confrontation, we also learned that Cobra Commander has possession of the identities and location of each family member of every G.I. Joe operative stolen during his recent infiltration of the White House, because there was a storyline where he was in the White House.
He was the Secretary of Defense.
Was it Zartan, though?
I think it was Zartan.
I think it was at the time. To say that we were startled by these events is an understatement. For these two events have sparked a new direction for the team, a new focus, a new drive, new operating procedures, and thankfully, additional names on the roster at long last.
And they had to go – like it was undercover because of the Secretary of Defense was Destro – or was it Destro or Zartan Whichever
one it
was.
Like into what the G.I. Joe movie plot was.
Yeah, like,
actually from a few
years
ago.
You know what? We're cutting your budget. So guess what? You've got nothing now. And he slowly depowered them.
So we start off in Dagestan, where you have a Cobra sniper by the name of Cobra Mortal, who is about to kill somebody over there that the Joes are trying to protect. And so you have Roadblock and Flint, who end up spotting this guy. And you have Cover Girl and Gung Ho, who end up finding this guy on the top of a building. And he says, why don't we just cut to the part where you lay the gun down? That's what Cover Girl says. And then we cut over to G.I. Joe headquarters, The Rock, where you have Joe Colton, who is basically going over the intel that they've learned so far and all of the stuff that I just recapped. And everybody's freaking out because Cobra Commander now knows where all the families of all the Joe members live. So, and there was actually a G.I. Joe episode about that way back in the day. Do you remember that? Where they went to like Scarlet's family and they had been taken over by Cobra or something like that.
Oh, no, I do remember that.
So now we go to Darfur and you have Cobra Commander who is bringing a U.S. soldier there, a soldier whose brother was killed in action, a soldier who is disenfranchised with what's happening with the military at this point. And he's basically turning this guy into a Cobra sympathizer by saying, look, this is what we're here to do. The world is the way that it is because there's no order. Cobra's here to restore that order. And so you can be a part of this. You can be a part of, you know, being appreciated. You can be a part of something where we are doing what's right. There's for people that are doing wrong, there's no mercy. We're taking them out, you know, blah, blah, blah. There's no due process. There's none of that kind of stuff. Cobra's doing what needs to be done. Mm. So he's doing that work over there. Back in Dagestan, you have Cobra Mortal who throws himself off the side of a building in order to avoid Cover Girl and Gung Ho. They end up chasing him down to the street level. And as Flint and Roadblock go to help, they run into another guy who is a Cobra sniper, and I forget what his name is, but it's something Bear. We'll find him, because in the back we have an awesome breakdown of all of the characters that are involved in this series. It's, where is he? Of course, I can't find it now. Something Bear. He's another sniper, so there's two snipers that were out to kill this guy, but they end up chasing them both down. And when they chase them down, you have an awesome face-off in an alleyway because Cover Girl runs into Ghost Bear is the other guy. So you've got Cobra Mortal and you've got Ghost Bear. And Cover Girl runs into this Ghost Bear in an alley while she's looking for the other guy. And she says, how hard do you want to make this on yourself? And you have this Ghost Bear guy's like, oh, they sent a woman after me? And he drops his gun. And at the same time, Cover Girl throws her gun on the ground and she goes, oh, that hard. Okay. So the two of them get into a fight. And this is where Mike Baer's artwork is just freaking amazing because there's six panels that lead into this fight and it's them sizing each other up in this alleyway with like a bridge that goes over the top of it and then just the action. And it starts off as a knife fight and then the two of them knocking each other all over the place and then Cover Girl hits this guy in the throat, knocks him in the jaw, punches him in the stomach, and then he starts to talk crap again and she shatters his kneecap and he goes down in a pile. And he's like, oh, you shattered my knee. And she's like, well, I could have shattered other things, but never let it be said that I'm without mercy. And so, because that was a line he used on her earlier. Then you have Gung Ho facing off against this Cobra Mortal guy. The two of them getting a knockdown, drag out fight. And it's just awesome. It's just hand-to-hand combat. Cobra Mortal ends up getting away, but he runs into Wild Bill and Shipwreck when he gets to the docks to try to get out of there. And they end up stopping him. So the Joes end up capturing these two snipers and stopping that incident in Dagestan, but they still are trying to figure out what Cobra's major play is. But the end of the book is them coming back to Joe headquarters, and you see that Shipwreck and Cover Girl and Wild Bill and some of the other ones were just brought in. So it's kind of like your reunion with these characters that you knew from the cartoon, that you knew from the previous series back in the day, and you're seeing them all here. And there's like a two-page spread, which I'll show you, Matthew, that kind of shows them all there. In this one, Cover Girl and Shipwreck are together, and so they come in together, and it's just awesome. So the artwork is absolutely amazing here. This is just the kickoff issue of this particular storyline, and then in the back of it you get from the central data desk a whole list of Cobra operatives that are now on like the most wanted list of G.I. Joe for them to go and track down. And you see that Cobra Mortal and Ghost Bear are both in custody. Everybody else, some of them are deceased, some of them are at large, but they're like taking stock of all of these different Cobra operatives that they're going to go out and take out. So I remember this series so fondly.
Yeah.
This was one that we talked about several times when we were going through the monthly issues of this book. And it made me want to pull out, and I think I am going to pull out, the entire World War III event too. And I wonder if that is collected in trade.
It is, Brian, because I have seen it as like the G.I. Joe World War III, and it's got all of them in it.
Because that might be an interesting summer reading project.
To go back and do
because
that,
I think really so. Because it really is a very cool event that brought back a lot of favorite characters and really expanded this series kind of in its home stretch with Devil's Due.
Yeah.
So it might be worth going back and doing that. And then I think, didn't they have some smaller series with Devil's Due after that before the license sort of changed hands?
I want to say that, but I remember they had, if you remember when they lost G.I. Joe, one of the first series to come out of that was Spooks.
Yes.
And
and that was Larry Hama.
Yeah, Spooks was one of those ones that was sort of like the G.I. Joe team going after Supernatural.
Yes.
Kind of stuff, which yep. was a great series, but once they lost G.I. Joe, it really kind of hurt them.
But the thing was, is they did such a good job yep. with this series. Uh-huh. And that's what I loved about it, is it really felt like, even though it was this smaller group, it just felt like, yes, this is what I want from a G.I. Joe series. So it was really good. Maybe we will revisit this as a fun event for the summer, because everybody loves G.I. Joe.
Oh,
how
yeah.
do you not love
oh,
G.I.
Absolutely.
Joe, for crying out loud? And especially because G.I. Joe, as they keep saying almost comically now on the cover of the IDW ones, the crown jewel of the Hasbro universe, it does feel like everything's going to be built around Transformers mm-hmm. and G.I. Joe.
Yep.
And so the G.I. Joe is not going away anytime soon, which is awesome.
Yep.
I'm surprised we don't have a new animated series out for G.I. Joe.
Yeah.
But I would think that that would be coming sometime in the near future. But I'm very behind on the whole Revolution stuff that was going on. I bought a on Humble Bundle, they had a digital comics bundle for Transformers that had like all the Transformers IDW stuff, that had like all the stuff leading into Revolution and part of Revolution. So I have some of that stuff at home. I just got to go back and read it all and get caught up, because G.I. Joe is just one of those things like that I grew up with and will always be near and dear to my heart.
And what I just found out was Art Baltazar and Franco are doing their version of Revolution.
Are they really?
For IDW.
Wow, interesting.
Which ought to be really, really good, because you're going to get two guys that understand younger readers that can write stuff for older readers, and they get to play with toys.
Yep. Very exciting stuff. So there you go. That is your Out of the Long Box for this week. That is going to do it for this episode of the Secret Identity Podcast. So for Mr. Matthew Herring, this is Brian LaTenry signing off. Have a great rest of your week, and we will talk to you in a few short days.
Bye-bye.